Hello and welcome to the Fantasy Finessers podcast. I am Khan Kapoor, joined as always by Maddie Wasserman. And today on the show, we're talking sleepers, breakouts, and busts for the 2022 fantasy football season. Maddie, how you doing today?
Doing good. You know, the voice is a little bit better than last week's episode, but we got through a lot of the top-end players on last week's episode. But today I'm excited to get to some more under-the-radar players. You know, now we're in late August. This is prime draft season. Some players been standing out in camp so far, stuff like that. So we have a lot more information. I'm excited to get right to it.
Yeah, last week we broke down what you're going to do in your, if you got the top pick in the draft, first three-round strategy, going down a little bit to the quarterbacks and tight end tiers. But now we're going to be looking at the bottom of the draft, some sleeper players, some breakouts that are a little in the middle rounds, and then some busts that you want to stay away from this year in fantasy. But the first guy I want to talk about here on the sleeper side, Damian Pierce has really solidified himself as the top running back. He's a rookie for the Houston Texans out of Florida, and he's been really impressive in the first few weeks of the preseason and training camp. He didn't really handle a big workload in college. He ran only about 100 times in his senior season. But he entered into camp behind Marlon Mack and Rex Burkhead and has clearly surpassed him. You watch him run in the preseason. He's got a lot of moves. He cuts really well. And he's got a lot more upside than a guy like Rex Burkhead, an older running back like Marlon Mack, who had some bad injuries in his past. So we know who those two guys are, but Pierce has a lot more upside. Maddie, what do you like about Damian Pierce here? His ADP, he's being taken outside top 30 at the position. Do you think he has upside here in this Texas offense?
Yeah, well, I mean, obviously, every year it seems like there's a rookie running back that everyone's looking to kind of attach themselves to, sort of a lottery ticket. And slowly over the last couple of weeks, that's gone from more of a lotto ticket. Well, if Max, you know, slides down and then Burkhead's not there, well, then there's a pathway for this guy to the top. But it's becoming less of a pathway and more of a reality so far. The Texans, to the point where they didn't even need to play him in the preseason because they already know what they have in him and they're looking for who's going to step up behind him. It seems like at this point, Pierce is less of a lottery ticket and becoming more of a sure thing to at least get that early down production. You mentioned that he hasn't played a lot previously in college, hasn't handled huge workloads, and there's still a lot of risk associated with him, which is why he's not going to be drafted probably in the top 20 of running backs. But I think at this point, the risk level is going down to the point where you can feel comfortable taking him somewhere in the 20s range, I'd say, as a running back. I think like the pathway is definitely there for him to have a really good season. You have to come with the caveat that he's still in this Texans offense and there's a ceiling to where that can be. But for a rookie running back in the year where there's not a ton of them, we talked about Breece Hall last week, but there's not that many interesting rookie running backs. This is definitely one, I think, to keep your eye on, and it's becoming more certain that he has some legitimate value.
Yeah, the one thing here about Damian Pierce that gives me a little bit of concern regarding his ADP is that it's probably going to ratchet up as we get closer to the start of the season, as we get into the weeks 3 and 4 of the preseason. If he keeps impressing, he might, you know, get up to being taken in the 5th or 6th round. And in that case, running back on that offense, you know, I may be a little disillusioned with him. But you talk about the lottery ticket. I see Breece Hall as a guy that has a lot lower of a floor than Damian Pierce does at this point. You know, Breece Hall being taken in the 3rd round of fantasy drafts, he can easily be a bust in fantasy. He has obviously a higher draft pedigree, NFL draft pedigree than Damian Pierce does. But I mean, Michael Carter is still there. Michael Carter is still highly regarded in that Jets organization. If you can get Pierce down in the 9th, 10th rounds, I see that as a better investment of your draft capital than getting a guy like Breece Hall, who, you know, in some cases, maybe has more upside than Damian Pierce, but also has a lower floor than Pierce does. Pierce has kind of already solidified himself as a top guy in training camp and in the preseason, and also the competition is a lot less strong than it is in New York. I mean, Michael Carter was great last season for the Jets.
Yeah, I mean, like, Pierce, I think there's a ceiling on what kind of we're talking about here. I think the first thing is, like, we gotta slow things down a little bit here. The first thing with Pierce is, like, there's a lot of excitement there, contingent on the fact that you're getting this guy in the 8th round, 9th round, and you're hoping right that he can soar above that. Once he starts going to the 5th round, I mean, we're still talking about a 4th round back that, you know, like, lacks some level of speed. I mean, you ran a 4.59 40, right? Like, there's a reason why, you mentioned the 106 carries. He's never cleared that during his 4 seasons at Florida. There's a reason why he was a 4th round running back to begin with. And obviously, you look at Alvin Kamara, Kareem Hunt as some of the recent examples of late round running backs that have burst on the scene as rookies. So there's obviously a pathway there. But I think once you get in the 5th, 6th round, I mean, like, I think settling, you want to settle for some more reliable type players. I mean, if we're talking about, let's say, you're taking Clyde Edwards-Helaire or are you taking Pierce? In that scenario, I'm still probably taking CEH, not because CEH is going to become a top 10 back. Yeah, there's a pathway towards Pierce coming there, but there's just such a level of certainty that we've seen what that looks like at the NFL level in someone like CEH. So I think if it gets to that level where we're talking fifth, sixth round, I'd probably stay away. I mean, I think slow down the hype a little bit.
Yeah, that's the one thing about drafting late is that a lot of these sleeper type guys early in training camp, early in the preseason, they start to become known commodities. And obviously, rookie running backs, you know, they don't always turn out well. Don't always get, you know, a rookie running back that really, you know, knocks your socks off. But Damien Pierce has the opportunity. He has the skill, you know, in preseason week two, he didn't get any run with the starters. And that was because, you know, head coach said that he saw what he needed to see from Pierce and he wanted to see more from guys like Marlon Mack and Rex Burkhead with the starters. So that is a good sign for Damien Pierce in this offense. But like you were saying, it is time to pump the brakes a little bit in terms of if he goes up to the sixth round. That, I think, is too much draft capital to invest in a rookie running back. And, you know, another guy on this Texans offense that intrigues me a lot is Nico Collins. Nico Collins is not a guy that has a lot of pedigree in terms of fantasy football. Last year in his rookie season, only had just about 480 yards, only scored one touchdown on an offense helmed by Davis Mills. But there's a lot of upside here. Nico Collins is being drafted basically free. He's outside the top 70 in wide receivers and PPR. He has no risk, and there's a lot of upside here with this guy. He's in an offense that's probably going to be trailing a lot, probably going to have to throw more than 35 times a game. Davis Mills had one of the better statistical rookie seasons you saw. I mean, obviously didn't jump off, you know, from the eye test, but statistically passer rating, things like that, completion percentage, he was up there in terms of rookies. I see Nico Collins going to solidify himself as a number two wide receiver in this offense behind Brandon Cooks. I mean, he's an outside guy. He's got a lot of size. He's got a good catch rate. This reminds me a little bit of Michael Pittman in that area, 6'4". He's got speed, 4.4 speed. So I think Nico Collins has a lot of upside here in this offense. And Maddie, you know, this Texans offense, we're talking about two guys that could potentially be really good. Like, this offense isn't great. So what do you think about Nico Collins? Do you think there's a little bit of a downside here on the offense he's in?
Well, I think it all comes back to Davis Mills, right? You're banking on him having a leap in his second season. I mean, there's a real argument to be made that behind Mac Jones that Mills was the second best quarterback last season amongst the rookies. And you're banking on whether he can take a step up is really where the offense can. I mean, you look at Collins from a season ago, he appeared in 14 games. He had just one touchdown. You expect that to go up. 61 targets. You expect that to go up. And you mentioned, like, there's a clear path to the number two role in that offense. And I think you're assuming Cooks, but we know there's a lot of injury concerns with Cooks, right, over the years. So there's a real pathway towards Collins getting a lot of work there. But I think you're really banking hard on Davis Mills and a Texans offense that has, you know, like, Lovie Smith is in charge of this team. You're not expecting this to be a high flute offense. So if you want to bet on them, that's fine. But to me, there's a ceiling on what you can get from a number two receiver in what you're expecting to be a bottom 10 offense. So a late round flyer, sure, but unless you get a Cooks injury, I don't really see him really surpassing Cooks as the number one role. And I'm not sure there's enough mouths to feed in that Texans offense.
Yeah, you know, you're not expecting him to finish in the top 20 at the position, right? But he's basically free in drafts. He could finish as a wide receiver 3, maybe some more upside there. Brandon Cooks is not necessarily a guy at his age that's going to be flying. He still has speed, obviously, but he's a little bit smaller than Nico Collins. Collins is more of a guy that's going to go up and get the ball in the end zone. So I think there's obviously upside here, and there's really no risk for taking Nico Collins, right? And I feel like Mills is going to develop in his second year. Obviously, you said Lovie Smith as the head coach. There's not a lot here to be excited about in terms of personnel. You know, not a lot of big, huge stars on this Texans offense. But Davis Mills, like I said, one of the better rookie quarterbacks, even though it did seem like it at times. And I think, you know, an offense that throws more than 35 times a game with the weapons they have outside of Brandon Cooks and Nico Collins probably can sustain a high target share for Collins, you know. And I think that at his cost, I will 100% take Collins. And I think this is an offense that, you know, probably is going to go up. You know, you would assume development from Collins, development from Davis Mills. And then obviously we talked about Damien Pierce, if they can get their running game going a little more than they did last year. I believe David Johnson was their running back last year. If I'm remembering correctly. So I have a feeling that this offense, you know, it's not going to be amazing. It's not going to be world beating, but I think there is a lot of upside for these lower tier names, especially a guy like Collins, who you can get basically free in drafts.
Yeah, I think that's fair, but I think, like, when you're looking for sleepers, you're looking for receivers. I don't think you need to even go that deep for someone to rely on. Yeah, it's a good lottery ticket, but I think, like, moving a little bit up the draft board to someone that I think is in a more reasonable range, someone you should be able to get sort of in that fifth, sixth round range, is Darnell Mooney. I think Mooney's a guy that, you know, it's easy to overlook, right? The Bears offense. We just talked about a guy in Davis Mills that showed a lot of good signs as a rookie. Someone that didn't show quite as many as Justin Fields, but he came in with a high pedigree. They changed coaching staffs this offseason. And you look at the depth chart, it's one of the more staggering depth charts in the league. The Bears wide receiver room is bare. There is no one else on that team. His target share a season ago was lag behind Cooper Kupp and few others for the percent of those Bears targets he got. There weren't that many to go around because the Bears offense was dismal a season ago. But look at this Bears depth chart. I mean, who's the second best option? Cole Kmet, maybe. They bring in Byron Pringle, you know, Equanimeous St. Brown. I mean, there's, like, we're getting the Daz Newsome. There's pretty much no one there, basically. A few guys you've pretty much ever heard of. And he's going to get a huge amount of the targets in this offense. Whether you like the offense, I mean, that's a different conversation. But if this offense shows signs of improvement, if Justin Fields shows signs of improvement, if this new coaching staff can come invigorate some stuff, Darnell Mooney is positioned to clean up a lot of that volume. I mean, if you're in a PPR league, I think there's a good chance Mooney can reach the top 10. Yeah, if Fields sucks, obviously this probably isn't going there. But even then, you have a solid floor that he's going to get a few receptions a week because there's really no one else to throw to. I mean, who is even the number two target in this team? Maybe Kmet, he really might be. So there's no one here. I think this is not only a safe pick because he has a floor in PPR, but I think this has a chance to get really, really interesting if the Bears offense can show signs of life.
Yeah, I like Mooney as a breakout player at his cost. I mean, being drafted outside of the top 25, but wide receiver seems a little bit low for me for Darnell Mooney. And like you said, opportunity and upside are the two things you look for in a fantasy player. He's got the opportunity in the last 4 weeks of the regular season. He was ninth in target share in the entire NFL at 27%, fifth in route participation at 95%. So this guy that plays all over the field, he has that deep ball. And I mean, the other members of this offense, I think Cole Kmet is a good tight end to target, but it's not to be saying he's going to eat into Mooney's target. St. Brown, other guys in this offense, you're not really worried about them in terms of taking away from Mooney. So I think this is a great breakout pick. I mean, being drafted around the 5-6 range, I think, you know, if you wait on wide receiver early in the draft, I think giving Mooney as your wide receiver two is great. I think
great having him too.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, sixth round, getting a guy, the number one receiver in his offense, an offense that should go up. Justin Fields, you know, the accuracy last year, he looked a little bit lost at times in the pocket, and he should probably take a step forward. You know, you would assume that the second year quarterback is going to do that. So I like Mooney there at his ADP. I wouldn't call him a sleeper because he's already being drafted pretty high, but I think a breakout at his position is extremely possible for Mooney. I mean, obviously you're not comparing him to a guy like Nico Collins in terms of draft position, in terms of opportunity, in terms of talent, but, you know, I think Mooney is going to be great at his cost. And another guy, if we're staying with breakouts, the guy we kind of mentioned last time on the show, Ramondre Stevenson, is the guy I'm extremely high on. Stevenson, he was a rookie last season. He was really good. He had a couple of incredible games when Damien Harris was hurt. And James White retired for the Patriots. Damien Harris, there's a lot of uncertainty with his status. Is he going to be traded from the Patriots? You know, I think that's more of a narrative-based thing than it is anything else. I don't think there's any legitimate reports about Damien Harris being traded. But I think you can still key in on Ramondre Stevenson at his cost. He was very streaky last year, but I think he can be a league-winning running back. He's currently being taken outside of the top 30 at the position. And I really think Ramondre Stevenson, he's got the talent. The offense there runs the ball a lot, number 12 in team run plays per game, 27.1 there last season. And Mac Jones is going to be more comfortable passing this year than he was last year. I mean, there's the infamous, I think, what was it, 3-pass attempt game for Mac Jones last year where they ended up winning.
In the bad
weather. That game was crazy. And the talent isn't a question here for Stevenson, 14.3% broken/missed tackle, great last year, second in the entire league. And also in the preseason, he's been taking over that 2-minute drill role, catching passes. Bill Belichick likes his development as a pass catcher. So I think Stevenson has a lot of upside here. A couple of concerning elements here is that Ty Montgomery has been getting a lot of attention in training camp. He's obviously a converted wide receiver, played on the Packers, on the Bears. And of course, Damien Harris is still in the mix there. But I think Ramondre Stevenson at his cost could be an RB1 at season's end.
I would push back on the Stevenson thing a little bit, only because you mentioned he's streaky, but I don't know if that does full justice to like just how extreme. And it wasn't just his performance. It was also the workload he was getting, whether Harris was healthy was a big factor. I mean, when you break down his fantasy performance from a season ago, most of the damage came in like two, maybe three games. He had two games where he got over 100 rushing yards and two touchdowns, and that attributed for like half of his total production pretty much from the entire season. He had 114 fantasy points a season ago, and over 50 of that came in those two games. So he was really streaky a season ago, and I think unless you get an injury to Harris, I don't think the upside's really there. You're banking on touchdowns. You're banking on him getting a lot of carries, which we just didn't see him get a lot last season. This is a guy who only had 14 receptions a season ago. Yes, there's no more James White here maybe, but there's going to be other guys. You mentioned Montgomery coming into – he's not really having much of a ceiling, that he's not given a floor because of the receiving work he's going to get. So you're really relying on him getting a lot of carries on the ground, and I think there's too many mouths to feed in that Patriots offense for there to really be a lot of upside.
Yeah, I could see that. There's definitely you know, some pushbacks there for Stevenson. I really like him. I'm trying to target him as a flex. Maybe even if you go zero RB early in the draft, you know, you could take him as your RB2. I think that's perfect.
But to me, if you go zero RB, you want to target a guy that is going to have more receiving upside, like that's going to give you probably more consistent production. I think Stevenson's a guy that's kind of going to be more boom or bust. If you're going for the zero RB type approach, which I might not agree with, like I think someone like maybe getting a Cordell Patterson makes more sense for your type of team. But I can see it as a later round pick to maybe fill in as your flex.
I mean, you saw Stevenson in preseason week one and two. He got some work on the two-minute drill with the starters, which he didn't do last season. Obviously, James White and Brandon Bolden were there, both obviously not part of the team anymore. I think there's upside here at his current cost. I think, I mean, talking maybe not, I said he could finish as an RB1. If you lower that expectation, you keep Damian Harris on the team, I think he could still finish inside the top 24 at the position. He's being drafted outside the top 30. I think there's clear upside there, maybe not a league winning breakout, but maybe a sleeper player at the position. But going into more busts, Maddie, you got any busts you want to talk about here, plays you want to avoid in your fantasy drafts this year?
Sure. So, you know, we talked about my biggest bust of this year, which we talked about earlier, at least one of them is Javonte Williams. We kind of hit on that. We hit on that a couple weeks ago. But another guy that I see is more of a bust when you sort of get into like the middle rounds, guys looking to avoid. You know, I think Miles Sanders is a guy that's really tempting to take this season. I understand why people want to take him, and people are touting him as kind of a sleeper pick because, you know, it's one of the league's run heaviest offenses, and, you know, he has a lot of touches. There's not a lot of other good backs there, but the production just has not been there for him last season. He was extremely inefficient. He got a lot of carries. He had 163 touches. He did not score a touchdown. He's missed time over the last couple of years. And I get all the reasons why people are not just saying that he's going to have a solid season. There's a lot of people that are picking him as a big-time sleeper. But for me, Miles Sanders is a guy that just has not had production over the last couple of years. And I think you have to worry about where his upside's coming from, just because on the field as an actual player, we have not really seen the production over the last couple of years.
Yeah, Sanders is really interesting. I mean, you look at his stats last year, no touchdowns.
No touchdowns, yeah.
That's just crazy. That's Julio Jones, you know, on the Falcons, just not scoring inexplicably. I think there's going to be positive regression in the touchdown department. I don't think you're going to see Jalen Hurts run in as many touchdowns as he did last season, which leads me to believe Sanders is going to be a little bit more of a beneficiary of that. One thing that obviously leads me a little bit to be concerned about Sanders is Kenneth Gainwell. We saw him in preseason week two. He got like 11 carries, broke off a few really good inside between the tackles runs, also broke off a few outside. I think he had like 50 rushing yards. Gainwell is definitely rising. His stock is rising in this Philadelphia offense, and he profiles as a pass-catching back. That's what he was coming out of college, and seeing him run as well as he has been in between the tackles for a Miles Sanders owner like myself, I already drafted a team, and Miles Sanders was part of that. That definitely gives me a little bit of a pause, but I think there's upside here for Sanders. It's definitely a high-risk, high-reward pick. We saw Sanders a few years ago when he came into the league. He was pretty solid for the Eagles, but last year just really took a downturn, but still averaging over 5 yards a carry in his career. He's got you know, he's got the talent to succeed at this level. We've seen it before. So I think it depends on where you are in your roster construction. If you're targeting Sanders as one of your, you know, primary running backs, I don't like that. I don't want him as an RB1 or RB2 because he just doesn't have the consistency you want. If you have taken one or two really solid backs that give you the consistency, that give you the touchdowns and the carries that you're looking for, I think getting Sanders as a flex option could be really good, because that could be, you know, Sanders could be a top 15 running back by season's end. It just depends for me on your roster construction, where you're at. I don't want to have Sanders, you know, be the anchor of my running back core, because I think he could just as easily fall off and not be as good as he can be.
Yeah, I think that's fair. It's just to me that I see him being talked about as a big sleeper pick. And I think, like, we're overthinking things at this point. In Miles Sanders' trajectory, we have a long history with him as fantasy owners. Another guy that I kind of look towards is more of a bust that I'm kind of, like, seeing on lists. I'm like, I don't know about that. Jalen Waddle. You know, he was really good a season ago, 104 receptions, but I don't see him getting the same level of opportunity this year. Obviously, Tyreek Hill comes into the fold. He's going to take over the number one role. And he's, you know, Mike McDaniel comes in. We know the Kyle Shanahan tree. There's more running involved. I just don't see Waddle. Like, you're banking on volume from a season ago is really what carried him, and obviously a couple chunk plays. But I don't see that really coming to fruition again this year with the new offense, with still Tua at quarterback, and with Tyreek Hill, who's the clear number one in this offense. You're banking on that volume from a season ago replicating, and that's just not going to happen this year.
Yeah, well, this whole Dolphins offense is going to be incredibly interesting to watch. We haven't really seen it all come together yet in the preseason with Tua, Tyreek Hill, Jalen Waddle, any whatever of their five or six running backs is going to maybe retain the starting role. Remember, in that backfield, you got Mostert, got Salvin Ahmed. I think Miles Gaskin is still there. You got Chase Edmonds, Raheem Mostert, just so many people there. I don't know what to make of this offense, to be honest. Like, can Tua Tagovailoa improve his downfield throwing enough to make Tyreek Hill be the Tyreek Hill that we've seen with Patrick Mahomes? I don't think that's possible. And if he can't do that, does that mean Jalen Waddle is going to get more attention in the middle of the field in the short and intermediate routes? Like, it's definitely interesting. Like, will Tua Tagovailoa improve as much as a passer? We didn't see him complete many deep balls last year. There was a few, Jalen Waddle caught a few deep balls, but accuracy-wise, Tagovailoa was best in the intermediate routes, and that's where Jalen Waddle shines. So I really don't know what to make of this offense. If you could get value out of either of those players, I would take them. But Tyreek Hill's being drafted in the top two rounds. I don't see that as someone I want to take. And, I mean, Waddle could conceivably fall down to the fifth or sixth round, and that may be a place where I want to take him. But this entire offense, until there's more clarity as to the development of Tagovailoa, I would just stay away from both of
them. Yeah, like, my point is that Waddle's wide receiver 14 this season ago, which is great as a rookie receiver, but he's being right now somewhere in the 15 through 18, 19 range right now, being drafted as a receiver, and that's about where he finished a season ago. But where is the room for him to go up from where he was a season ago? You say second-year receiver, maybe he makes a leap, but with the scenarios around him, like, in a vacuum, there's room for him to go up, but with the scenarios that's being presented to him this year, I don't really see the room for him to grow from where he was a season ago. So I would, that's a guy I'm staying away from.
Yeah, that's a fair point. There isn't a lot of upside from where he finished last season. He's being basically drafted where he finished last season. And the question, of course, being, can Tua Tagovailoa, you know, support two high volume pass catchers in an offense? We haven't seen it before. For a player, he last season, the Dolphins, you know, they split time between Brissett and Tagovailoa, and Tua not great at the deep ball. I mean, he averaged, you know, just about 220 yards per game per start. His average depth of target was just 7 yards. That's not great. That's not a player that you want Tyreek Hill to go into that offense. You know what I mean? So that's definitely, I agree, you know, and the term bust, it is a little bit misconstrued in terms of how fantasy football analysts use it. In my opinion, I just see bust as a guy who's not going to, you know, perform at their ADP. Like, we're not saying Waddle's going to get zero fantasy points. I think we're just saying, you know, there's better options out there.
Right.
You know?
It's a risk-reward. Everything in fantasy drafting obviously comes down to risk-reward. And in this scenario, it probably doesn't make sense to draft him at the level that he was a season ago, knowing that his ceiling is capped and on improving, unlike some other guys that you could potentially target in that range.
And another guy at the same position I want to talk about in terms of bust, Amari Cooper, I think is probably the biggest bust at his draft position. And I think his draft stock is going to be lower because of the news of Deshaun Watson's 11-game suspension. Jacoby Brissett is the starting quarterback for the Browns. for the first 11 weeks of the regular season. And Cooper, at this point, at time of recording, ADP is going ahead of Courtland Sutton, going ahead of Allen Robinson, which to me, I just don't see the viability of picking Cooper over those guys. He's clearly the lead dog in this passing game, but the offense is going to run through Nick Chubb. It's not going to run through Jacoby Brissett. I see Amari Cooper as a massive bust at his current ADP, but as the season, as we get closer to the regular season, I think he's going to drop in ADP probably to outside the top 24 of the position.
Yeah, I mean, I think where he's being taken right now, which, as you mentioned, is in the top 25, doesn't really make any sense. That should be adjusted due to Watson. But I think we knew anyways that Watson wasn't long to be here for most of the season. You're hoping that, I think if you're drafting Cooper, I think your vision of it is that you survive with him as kind of a flex play until Watson comes back. Watson's back in time for the fantasy playoffs. Then Cooper takes off and he becomes fringe wide receiver one, wide receiver two. I think that's the best case scenario for him. But how many targets is he really going to get in this offense? When have we been proven recently that the number one offense for the number one wide receiver for the Browns, you go back to Odell for the last couple seasons, is going to get a consistent share of targets? We really haven't seen it, so I'm not really sure where.
Especially the number one wide receiver in a Jacoby Brissett led offense, which is another thing you have to worry about,
right? So there's two factors in play. You start with just the Browns, and then you add on the fact that you're only getting Watson here towards the end. It's kind of tough to see where Cooper's value is coming from. I mean, yeah, he's no doubt the top target in this offense. He had to fight for targets. He had CeeDee Lamb in place, Michael Gallup, the last couple of years. So he wasn't, in Cleveland, there is no doubt who is the number one receiver there. But that being said, I'm not sure if there's enough upside here to really draft him at this point. I think there's a couple of guys we could talk about that like make sense that you're like, okay, we have the value here. Let's say DeAndre Hopkins could be an example of this. Or someone would be like, all right, if I'm going to get DeAndre Hopkins in the 10th round, then I can suck it up when he's not going to provide value to my team for hoping that he's going to be there later on. And that could be true with Cooper too, but if you're getting him in the 5th round, then there's no point in doing that because you're drafting him. You're not getting value for doing that in return. Hopkins is a guy that I think could have a lot of value. I mean, it was a weird season last year for him. You know, he only got 6.1 targets per game a season ago, which was a lot down from the previous year. But like, if you're getting him, if he's being drafted as the 45th receiver off the board, 50th receiver off the board, there's value for someone like that, right? If Cooper's being drafted at half of that, there's much less value there if you're going to have to suck it up throughout those 11 weeks when he's not going to be there. We're
Watson's not going to be there. This offense upside on the passing game at least is definitely capped with Jacoby Brissett under center. I don't remember, you know, Jacoby Brissett really maintaining a top receiving option in his long career. I mean, back with the Dolphins, I think we saw maybe a few games. Jalen Waddle had like a couple maybe solid PPR games with Jacoby Brissett, but there really wasn't much. And taking a break from sleepers, breakouts, and busts for a second, one news and notes item that came out yesterday. I think we kind of knew that this was going to happen before the announcement, but Baker Mayfield is the QB1 for the Carolina Panthers. I think, like I said, this was kind of known. We kind of thought it was his job to lose all along throughout training camp. Sam Darnold there as well in Carolina. But, Maddie, what do you make of this Panthers offense? We have the clarity at the quarterback position. There's a lot of fantasy-relevant guys in this offense. I mean, DJ Moore, Christian McCaffrey. I mean, I guess there's two. But also, I see Rashard Higgins maybe carving out some value. You played with Baker in Cleveland. What do you make of this Panthers offense with now we have clarity at the quarterback position?
I mean, it's such a weird situation, right? Because, you know, Matt Rhule is in way on the hot seat. Like, there's a version of events here where this just goes off the rails really early on. And McCaffrey's proven that he's pretty much situation proof and that he's been on sucky teams and still delivered top fantasy performances. But I think DJ Moore is a guy that I look at, and he kind of makes me a little bit worried. This is a guy that did not have more than 8 receptions in any game last season. He played every game. He played all 17 games a season ago, and he did not get over 8 receptions in a single game. There's a ceiling on what DJ Moore can provide in this offense. You hope that maybe Baker can provide better play than Bridgewater a season ago, but I mean, even so, the increase is not going to be so substantial that all of a sudden I think DJ Moore is going to be able to take that next leap. He's obviously an enticing player, but ultimately this team is capped by the quarterback play and by the offense, which Matt Rhule's not proven anything. He fired Joe Brady a season ago, brought in a new offensive coordinator, but ultimately in his tenure here, it's not been that enticing. I think the Panthers are a team that I'm personally, I know we talked McCaffrey versus Taylor last week, and McCaffrey, I said, he's pretty much proven that when he's on the field, he's situation proof. But outside of that, whether it's him, whether DJ Moore, whether it's Rod Robbie Anderson. I just want to stay away from this team. I don't think you want a part of the Panthers this year, at least their passing game, at least to me. I don't know what Baker is going to provide. I think there's just too many question marks here.
Yeah, I mean, we saw with DJ Moore, you know, the route usage, the target share, just a couple of stats to throw out. He was one of 11 wide receivers to run a route at least 90% of their team's dropbacks. He had a top three air yard share and was seventh ranked in target rate per route run. And all of those metrics being up there in the top percentiles would lead to, you know, a wide receiver being in the top 12 at the position. But I mean, abysmal quarterback play in Carolina just led to him finishing as a wide receiver 19, which was kind of unprecedented.
He didn't get enough targets.
That route involvement with that air yard share. So Baker Mayfield, you got to assume is an improvement here in the situation, right? I mean,
yeah, but only moderately.
Wasn't Cam Newton the quarterback for Carolina? Yeah, moderate improvement. So I think, you know, looking at DJ Moore's ADP this season, he's being drafted as the 15-16 range at the position, which I think is pretty good for him. If he finished 19th last year, I think he's probably going to finish inside the top 15 at the position this year, just given his usage. I mean, obviously McCaffrey not being there last year led to him being more involved. So I'm not necessarily staying away from DJ Moore. There might be better options when he could be taken, but if he's on the board and he's the best player available, I think I'm totally fine with taking him. Other options in this Carolina Panthers offense, I mean, you're not drafting Baker Mayfield to start.
No.
You know, if you want to go on a narrative-based thing, he is playing the Browns week one. He could drop a 40 bomb. You know, you never know.
Seems unlikely.
So if you want to do that, go for it. I don't think I'm going to, but, you know, at the ADP Moore's at, I wouldn't necessarily avoid him. He has the highest passing touchdown percentage of any quarterback Moore has ever played with. You know, so there is a world where DJ Moore excels with Baker Mayfield at quarterback. But of course, Baker Mayfield wasn't able to support Odell Beckham Jr., right? So there is a lot of things to weigh here. I'm just saying I wouldn't necessarily avoid DJ Moore. I just think there might be better options out there.
Yeah, I agree. Another guy we talked about last week, the running back by committees and how the value to be found is in the guys that are in the second part of that committee on teams where it's kind of there's a flashier player and then there's the secondary player. I'll bang the drum for this again. I don't understand. Melvin Gordon is ranked outside the top 100 in the majority of leagues. This is a guy that's going in like the 9th, 10th round of drafts. First of all, if Ward Williams to get hurt, this goes for a lot of committees, Melvin Gordon instantly has a ton of value. But regardless of that, I believe he is standalone value. He was really good a season ago. Let's remember, he got 203 carries a season ago. Like I said, we feel like Javonte Williams, he's a young guy, he's going to take another step up in his second season. Williams was great, whatever. But like, Gordon is, what evidence do we have to point to Gordon not getting 50% of the work? They were at a dead even split a season ago. They split carries nearly 50-50 last year. There's just not that much evidence that Williams is going to take a step ahead. Yeah, we as fantasy managers, we picture that happening, but we've never been presented evidence, and nothing that the coaching staff has said so far has pointed towards there being any differences here. I think he was the RB20 a season ago, and I think that he has standalone value this year, and getting the second guy in the committee, while it's not as flashy, to be your third running back on your team, maybe sit on your bench for a little bit, could be used as a flex sometimes. I think it's really good value.
Yeah, I agree. I have, of course, in our last episode, I was going really hard on Javonte Williams, but I definitely see the value of Gordon here. Being drafted as RB36 in PPR leagues, like you said, finished inside the top 20 at the position. And also just an interesting note here, looking at the differences in ADPs on the different sites, in ESPN leagues, he's being drafted as 124th player, and his average draft position in NFL and Yahoo is inside the top 100. So if you're playing an ESPN league, there's definitely
a chance to get value at Melvin Gordon. And that's also because the ESPN board right now has him ranked really, really low. I believe he's like, right now he's 119th on the ESPN board. So you can get him much later because if everyone's drafted off the typical rankings.
Exactly, yeah, there's upside there, just at his draft position, depending on the site, for sure. And I mean, you know, he showed he had some gas left in the tank, right? I mean,
yeah,
he finished 8th in Pro Football Focus's rushing grade and forced missed tackles. He had 45. Obviously, Javonte Williams broke a tackle on like 36% of his runs, which is one of the best rookie marks in NFL history. So the talent difference there, Javonte Williams is someone that every single fantasy player, and maybe, you know, a lot of football fans just want to see get 80% of the touches, get 20 carries a game, get 5 catches a game, all these things. But realistically, it's not going to happen, at least in the start of the season. So I think Melvin Gordon, you know, he had a foot injury scare, I believe, a few weeks ago, but that wasn't really serious. So I remember a lot of Javonte Williams owners in early drafts were like celebrating that foot injury. Side note, don't celebrate NFL players.
At least
NFL
publicly, players getting injured. Publicly.
Don't be that guy. Just don't. That's just horrible. Like, don't do that. Anyway, but I see Gordon, you know, I don't like the fact that Javonte Williams is probably going to be in a 50-50 split again for the first half of the season, but I think you can find value with Gordon for sure.
Yeah, I agree. My next question, what's your opinion on Devin Singletary? Right now, you know, he's going around sixth round or so in most drafts. You know, 70, mid-70s sort of is where the rankings, I think, fall on him for the most part. But in my opinion, I think Singletary could be a good value. I know it's kind of boring because, like, we talk about him every year and there's always challengers and he's never that fun or interesting. But in the latter part of last season, they showed a commitment to Singletary, I thought. And into the playoffs, he was really good and he was getting used a lot. He was fifth in breakaway plays, 16 in evaded tackles a season ago. So I don't think – and everything we've seen coming out of camp in the preseason so far indicates, again, that he's going to be the lead guy. So while it's not fun, he's been around for a long time or whatever, I think you can find value there and kind of a more boring guy, but someone that's consistent and Buffalo has shown more commitment to lately.
Yeah, you know, Devin Singletary had a really interesting fantasy season last year. I mean, down the stretch, I think the last six weeks
they started using him like a
three in PPR scoring, like
they started using him like a bell cow
per game, 54 snaps to close out the season. You know, there's a lot of upside here. The one thing, of course, the Bills invested high draft capital in James Cook, of course, Dalvin Cook's brother, and in the last preseason game, week two, each of those three running backs had four carries. Zach Moss had two goal line carries, took two touchdowns away. So there are a lot of mouths to feed in this backfield. Of course, Josh Allen is going to vulture touchdowns whenever he can, you know, in those bootlegs, QB design runs, whatever it may be. But the proven usage here is with Singletary. So I completely understand why he's being drafted among the top of those three running backs. And I kind of like his value because James Cook is kind of lowering it down draft boards. And I think Singletary has a lot of upside here. He's being drafted as the number 30 back in PPR, a guy that finished the top six in the last 6 weeks of the season. I think there's screaming upside here for Devin Singletary. Of course, and you said he's been around for a while. He's only 24 years old. He's not been around for that long. Like, it seems like he has been, but he's still a young guy. Of course, James Cook is coming in. He's the new guy in this offense, but I think there's a lot of upside here for Devin Singletary. Like I said, being drafted at the top 30 of the position, RB 30 in PPR, RB 26 in standard. I think we're going to see James Cook get a lot of passing down work. Maybe Zach Moss is going to get some goal line work. But we saw Zach Moss being the doghouse for this Bills in the Bills organization at the end of last year, and that really led to Singletary being, you know, a really high volume player. So I like Singletary this season. You know, this is a pretty ambiguous backfield, but it is an offense you want to be a part of this Bills offense no matter how you can.
Yeah, I mean, Cook, I think the biggest concern with Cook is that he's going to eat into Singletary's receiving work. But it's not like Singletary was feasting on receptions every week either. It's really, you're banking on Singletary getting a lot, the bulk of the carries in this offense. And if he does picking up those touchdowns you mentioned, yeah, there's a reason why he's being picked outside the top 25 as a running back, because there's a lot of question marks. But for that value, I think you're getting a more reliable role that at least he's going to be a big part of this offense than a lot of the other running backs that go in a similar range where there's more question marks.
Yeah, I mean, looking at Singletary's entire season last year, he had 40 receptions, only 228 receiving yards, so really didn't do much with those receptions. So I definitely think James Cook is going to mix in on third downs and two-minute drills, things like that. But I mean, on the rushing side of things, yards per carry for Devin Singletary was pretty solid. 4.6 yards per carry, had a game in the fantasy championship, 23 carries, 110 yards, two touchdowns. Like, that's someone you want a part of. And it's very surprising to me that a guy that helped so many fantasy managers make it to the championship and win their leagues is down at RB 30. You know, I don't think James Cook has really cut into Singletary's upside enough for him to be down at RB 30.
Yeah, I agree. That's sort of my opinion there. Again, like, you're fishing. There's no perfect scenarios. Singletary, there's no pathway for him to be in the top 10, but he can return pretty good value for you at that slot.
Yeah, and going on to another name here that I like, another Bills player as well, Isaiah McKenzie is looking to be the top slot receiver in Buffalo. I believe we talked about him a little bit last year. Last week. He is one of my sleepers as well. Josh Allen praised him in camp. He looked he's not necessarily free in drafts anymore. He has gone a little bit up in the draft board ADPs, but he's down there. I mean, outside the top 40 at the position, you know, going a little bit higher than Nico Collins. I think McKenzie has a lot of upside. You know, he's going to get targets in this offense. We saw Cole Beasley, you know, feast as a slot receiver. I think he's a little faster than Cole Beasley. One concern is Jameson Crowder is there, but I think we know what Crowder is at this point in his career, and I think McKenzie has higher upside than he does.
I think that's interesting. I think McKenzie is he's obviously going to probably be a bit of a later, little bit later in the draft he's probably going to go. I don't think he's really on people's radars quite as much as Gabe Davis, which you mentioned. But yeah, I think there's good value there for someone else to step up in that Bills offense. There's obviously a gaping hole left there, as you mentioned. So I do think there's some value. I think that's definitely a later – that's a little bit later on, though, I think.
Yeah, definitely. This episode, we're trying to get more of the later guys. I know you have some thoughts about Chris Olave. What are your thoughts about him, rookie, coming into the Saints organization? Do you think he's kind of a sleeper, or do you think he's being maybe a little overvalued?
Yeah, well, I mean, Olave, you know, there's those guys every year that I think we've been doing a solid job in this episode falling into all the cliche traps of the guys that, you know, there's so much of a sleeper that they're not even really a sleeper much anymore just because they're talked about so much. Olave can fall somewhat into that category, but he was really, really good in college, and he's really developed. He's not going to be a rookie in the prototypical way. Michael Thomas, obviously, is coming back to play a full season this year. You pick up Jarvis Landry. Those are more underneath possession type guys. I think Olave is a real chance to stretch the field in this offense, and with Jameis at the helm at quarterback, hopefully playing a full season this year, there's legitimate potential for them to connect on deep balls. Olave to be a guy that's being taken right around the top 100 right now, maybe a little bit outside of that on ESPN at least, and there's a chance for him to return a lot of value and be good right away. All indications coming out of camp, people that have seen him say, like, this dude is good, and he's good right now. And I think there's really good value with him because he's a rookie, and yeah, there's uncertainty, and there's a chance that he's not going to get enough targets to merit this. But I think especially in non-PPR leagues, which I know we mostly focus on PPR, but especially in leagues that are less focused on that, there's a lot of value to be had. Keeper leagues, you know, Olave can return a lot of value, and I think Winston's a really good quarterback for him to come in with in this new offense. Obviously, they lose Sean Payton this year, but Winston's a really good fit for Olave, and I think he's going to be good from the start. He's shown so much talent. Obviously, he put up great numbers at the combine. I think Olave, like, a lot of times you don't want to fall into the trap of what everyone's talking about as the hype pick, but I think there's real legitimacy behind that.
Yeah, for sure. I think Jameis Winston may be the perfect quarterback for him. I mean, ranked fourth in average depth of target last year, a guy that pushes the ball down the field as much as possible. And I mean, you contrast him with a receiver like Jarvis Landry. These are completely diametrically opposed receivers.
And that's why he's a great pick for the Saints.
Yeah, exactly. Landry and Michael Thomas are very similar in terms of, you know, underneath routes, slants, shorter, you know, shorter intermediate. So I think Olave has himself a role in this Saints offense that no one else really can obtain. I don't see Jarvis Landry going on the outside and getting separation downfield from defenders like Olave did back when he was in Ohio State. In college, Olave caught 7 touchdowns on throws of 20 plus yards, which is what Jameis Winston excels at, throwing the ball down the field. And I think, you know, probably a boom bust wide receiver at the start of the season with, you know, other mouths to feed. Alvin Kamara is still there. You got Michael Thomas, Jarvis Landry. But as the season goes on, as he builds more connection with Jameis Winston, Olave could be a guy that gets 6 or 7 targets a game. And with that downfield prowess, that can turn into a healthy amount of touchdowns and some solid yardage.
And by the way, Michael Thomas, what evidence do we have that he's going to be healthy all season long? There's going to be time when he's out, and Olave, there's a real chance of him becoming the top guy right away for the Saints, or at least maybe not the first couple as you mentioned, but by the time playoffs is rolling around in fantasy, there's a real chance that Olave is going to be near the top.
Yeah, a couple more news and notes items, and then we'll get out of here. But Antonio Gibson was returning kicks in preseason week 2 for the Washington Commanders. That is not good for his fantasy value. Brian Robinson looked real good in his action. So this backfield
is tough for people. This is why you do not have drafts in early August for your fantasy leagues.
Yes, this is exactly why. Antonio Gibson was highly regarded before preseason. He fumbled week 1. He was back to returning kicks in week 2. We did have some solid receiving work. I think 3 catches for 37 yards. But I think first and second downs, they may belong to Brian Robinson Jr. at this point.
Yeah, but there's real stuff there with Robinson. Another guy we talked to, obviously we talked early in the episode about some other rookie running backs that could be intriguing. But Brian Robinson, you know, he's a power back, right? He's not going to blow you away with the speed, but he's 225 pounds, and he didn't get a ton of work at Alabama his first few years, but he really emerged as the top dog last year, and he was a beast last year. There's a reason why he rose up to being a third-round pick. I think he's going to get a lot of carries. And the fumbling problems with Gibson, I mean, they were bad last year. You wonder if it's a mental thing at this point coming up again in the preseason. And I think Ron Rivera and this team has made it pretty clear. If the fumbling stuff continues, like, that's just it. You cannot have a running back in the NFL that has the yips that's going to be fumbling the ball. Like, you just need someone solid. J.D. McKissic, you mentioned him, right? He's going to be a passing down back. He's not going to be getting a lot of the runs, so that really leaves Robinson and Gibson. And if Robinson is really asserting himself there, then Washington should have no problem giving Robinson that top lead role, at least at some point. I think that if Gibson were to be injured or just get go in the doghouse because of his fumbling problems, there's real value in this offense. As shown before, evidenced by Gibson's year or season ago when he had 258 carries, that there's work to be had in this offense to be supported for that primary runner role, even alongside a guy like J.D. McKissic that had 43 receptions. There's work to be had for that top runner. So if he can get to that level, You take Robinson, and I think if you can get him a little bit later, if you can get him 10th round, 11th round, something around that, that's amazing value. Anything earlier than that, you're banking on a lot of things still have to go right for Robinson to emerge as a legit guy, but there's really good value because there is a clear pathway to him getting to that point.
Yeah, looking at Brian Robinson's ADP at the beginning of August, it was at 190, so around like really late in drafts. Now, updated ADP, 142. He's gone up over 47 spots.
And by the way, I think if you can get him there, that's not a bad value.
No, absolutely not. I think as this preseason goes on, we're probably going to see that go up maybe to 110, maybe even inside. I don't know about inside the top 100.
I don't know. Inside the top 100.
A little bit much. But Antonio Gibson, remember, he was a converted wide receiver, right? He doesn't have a lot of experience as a between the tackles runner. And so I think Brian Robinson probably, you know, there's a pathway. Like I said, I believe we talked about this last week. There's a pathway here to him being taken or him being the one and two down back guy. And then Antonio Gibson can't be the third down guy exclusively because J.D. McKissic is also there in this offense. So there's a lot of things talking about Gibson's ADP. He was at around in the mid to high 70s. He was at 77, 72 to 77 ADP. Now he's down to 90. So he's been tanking. Robinson is on the rise. So Gibson is a guy that if you drafted early and you drafted Gibson high, I'm sorry, that's just tough. And one last guy I'll key in on, we haven't talked about the tight end position at all today. We talked about Cole Kmet a little bit. I think he is probably the breakout tight end of this tight end crop. If you don't get a top-tier tight end, you don't get a Kyle Pitts, Mark Andrews, Travis Kelce, George Kittle, Darren Waller, I think you look out for Cole Kmet. He has the opportunity to be the second guy in this Bears offense. And, you know, he didn't do that much last season. He didn't score any touchdowns, but he was on the field for 83% of the team snaps. Jimmy Graham's no longer going to be taking catches away in the red zone. So I think Cole Kmet's going to be a good tight end to target late in your drafts.
Yeah, we talked about this earlier when we were talking about this Bears offense. There's just nobody there. Cole Kmet is not someone that inherently gets you fired up, but who else is there? There's just no one really there that's that exciting. So by default, Cole Kmet. I mean, like, you never, the by default guys, like, I've been down that road before. It gets a little bit dangerous when you're like, well, there's nobody here, so Cole Kmet, step right up. Yeah, like, you're still banking on Cole Kmet has to be the one to step up ultimately, but there's just no one in this offense, and you're banking that touchdowns you mentioned. Jimmy Graham was used a lot in the red zone. He wasn't used much else. He's gone now, so you hope Cole Kmet lines up in the goal line. Again, the Bears, like, it's contingent the same way we were talking about earlier. It's all contingent on the Bears' offense has to be better for this to really provide value, because if you have the tight end that's the number two option in the 29th best offense in the league, that's not really doing anything for you. But if the Bears have a better offense, then all of a sudden you're riding Cole Kmet up there. So I do think that is a good, you know, the tight end position, it gets really bleak really quickly with kind of like low-end options, which is the argument for taking one of those established guys. Irv Smith is the only other one that I think is interesting to me as kind of a later round guy. You know, like, he's had injuries throughout his career, but I do think that, you know, he presents some solid potential. You know, he's caught over 73% of his targets, and averaged 12.2 yards per catch a season ago. So, like, if he can present that again and he maybe gets a few more targets in that Minnesota offense this year, I think, like, he's someone that has good value. But outside of that, it's pretty bleak at who's a later round value at tight end.
Absolutely. And with that, that's going to do it for this episode of the Fantasy Financials podcast. Stay tuned. We're going to get some position previews out later on. Yes. And moving forward until the NFL season starts. But follow us on the socials. Me, Twitter, at Colin Kapoor. Maddie underscore Wasserman at Twitter or on Twitter. And Maddie, got anything else to say before we sign off?
Yeah, you know, if you see us around the streets, we do sign autographs. We don't even charge for it. So, you know, get it while you can.
Yeah, I'm currently in Boston. You know, you see me around, I'll be sure to, you know, sign, give me some free fantasy advice. First tip is free. Second tip is like $20. So, you know, watch out for that.
Yeah, ask your best question first.
I am Colin Kapoor. Thank you for listening to the latest edition of the Fantasy Financials podcast, and we'll see you next time.